case this morning, Larry Davis versus Chris Ocamon.
If it please the court, my name is Michael Sutherland. I'm representing Larry Davis. This is a tough place to be in because I'm following Ken Falk in a much more interesting case. I represent somebody who has been a 20-year veteran as a senior humane officer, which is another way of saying senior dog catcher. But nonetheless, it's a very important case to him. We've outlined a history quite succinctly in our briefs, but I would like to point to a couple things which we think distinguish the analysis of the trial court and the defendant's analysis in reaching their conclusion that this is a case which is exempt under the First Amendment, or, secondly, that it is entitled to qualified immunity. I believe that the controlling case in the circuit is probably the Moss versus Martin case, which was recently decided. And we can distinguish Larry Davis's case in many respects from that controlling case. The court in that instance was reluctantly forced to accept the position of the State Personnel Commission, which defined the jobs, arguing or finding that it had overextended the definition of those people who were non-exempt. And that application flew in the face of Rutan. We believe that chastisement applies equally here. The court found that if there is no case succinctly or specifically on point, then it is up to the plaintiff to find other reasons why the defendants should have known that this clearly violated the law and the protections of political patronage under the First Amendment. First of all, Larry Davis became the senior humane officer under a Democratic administration.
He was a political hire.
Pardon me?
He was a political hire.
He was a political hire. That's true. And they
pointed
that out. And
now he's complaining about the job being subject to political hiring.
And what happened is the city got sued. And the city decided they were wrong. They knew they were going to get sued, and they paid on that. So that confirms his position that it was a wrong hire. In other words, he was hired as a
political... His own hiring was wrong.
Huh?
His own hiring was wrong.
Well, he was the beneficiary of a political hiring. That's true. But he was then in a position for three terms of Mr. Lawler and then another term under a Republican administration. So when he was concerned about the security of his job in the very beginning, he said, you know, if you're firing this lady that I'm replacing and you know she's going to sue you and you're settling up with her, where's my job security? And they said, well, the reason we're paying out on that first settlement is because we're wrong and you have a secure job. This is not a political job. So it goes along, and then, as we say in our briefs, and this is another distinguishing fact, is that the Republican administration comes along and defeats the Democrat, Mr. Rock, and the Republican administration looks real closely at this position and says, Larry Davis supervises 4 to 5 people, no more and probably a lot less than a sergeant on a police department. It's not a political job. We're looking at this real closely, and we don't want to be sued. So, at least not by him. They were sued by a couple other people they fired, and they won. But they didn't take on him because his position was not an executive position. His position was SAM 3, a supervisor management position. He was an employee that was entitled to overtime. In other words, he was an exempt employee, non-exempt employee. The second or third thing that we note is that the decision back in 88 and the decision in 2004 was the result of a careful analysis by both the mayor-elect and the city attorney at the time, and we have affidavits in the record to support that. So we have a clear case where the analysis of that job by the people in power found that this was not a political appointment. What the defendants have relied upon was an outside consulting firm, Wagner and Associates, that defined the job for the city, the various jobs for the cities over a period of time. And what we did was to demonstrate by testimony of people who had knowledge of this—that this was a systemically or systematically false and dishonest job definition. That there were many examples that were offered to demonstrate that this was not a reliable job description.
If I could interrupt for a minute, I know that there are all kinds of interesting factual twists and turns to this case about the job descriptions.
Yes.
And what was behind them and the consulting firm that was hired and so forth. But as a matter of the organic law of the municipality, it seems to me that this position is policymaking. The ordinances that are applicable to the senior humane officer vest him with regulatory authority to not only run the department and supervise his subordinates, but promulgate regulations for the issuances of permits and licenses and the revocation of permits and licenses and actually implement those regulations as well. And where an official, a public official, has that kind of regulatory authority to actually promulgate regulations, it seems to me that that easily fits the definition of a policymaker, regardless of what the job description that was the subject of all of these negotiations and machinations in an effort to provide more job security to this particular political hire.
Yes, Judge, if I can address that. He didn't make any of those regulations or provisions. And, in fact, those decisions, like any comparable action by a police officer, he may enforce a regulation or an ordinance. But
this is not just enforcement authority. This is regulatory authority. Your client has the authority to, or his position does anyway,
to enforce the regulation.
Promulgate regulations.
He doesn't, but he didn't. That's what we were trying to point
out. It doesn't matter whether he did or didn't. It's that's vested authority in the position by municipal ordinance.
That's true. And if we can demonstrate, if the plaintiff can demonstrate that the ordinance or the regulation or any other job description is not, in fact, what is being done. In other words, I think the Supreme Court in Rutan says we're not going to simply look at the job definitions for the only
That's
guidance.
With respect to job descriptions. If the ordinance vests him with that authority, he's a policymaker. And that's the end of the inquiry. We don't get into factual debates about what glossing job descriptions have to say and what the motives for their enactment were.
Well, if in fact it's just policy, then there's technical policy and there's professional policy, but it's not political policy. And it seems to me under the First Amendment, you can have a lot of people who have a technical policy because of their expertise, and they are in fact an integral part of the government, but that professional policy doesn't equate to being a confidential relationship or being a necessary political ally for the administration to be successful. And that's what some of the discussions in the various cases talk about.
He has the authority, or his position has the authority, to promulgate regulations in this subject area having to do with animal control within the municipality. That's policy making by any definition.
The
focus on whether it's technical or not seems to me to be beside the point. And anyway, he didn't have any technical expertise.
Well,
he was a political hire.
I think there is some technical expertise involved when you're talking about euthanasia and managing a dog shelters and so forth.
Right. This is we've got elected coroners in Wisconsin. I mean, that doesn't make any sense either. But that's what your ordinances say.
I understand the court's position, Judge. But if the ordinance does not, in fact...
I have a little different outlook, I guess, on the ordinance than Judge Sykes. But it seems to me the ordinance says that this commission, the Animal Control Commission, sets the policy, and the dog catcher carries it out. Is that correct? Or
that's the way I understand it, and that's the way that's the way it actually operates.
Look at the ordinance.
Yeah, and then Mr. Hoppe was pointing out several times that the ordinances and the job descriptions
that way, as far as I can make out.
Yeah, did
the
not.
The reality is entirely different, but the theory is that the commission is going to set policy, and this fellow is going to carry it out. Now, There may be other things said, but that was my general impression of what the.
And that's true.
And I don't know why you don't just rely on that. I mean, all this other stuff.
Well, I'd like to rely on that, but Judge Sykes has her position, and that's part of the position.
Well,
and the case.
No, I'm not going to argue with Judge Sykes here. But
nor am
I. The point is, you're talking about reality. You're talking about what happened in this case. And the law is you got to rely on the job description. And I guess you got to rely on the job description unless it conflicts with the ordinances. And in this case, it seems to me that it does. It seems to me that's your strongest argument.
That's true. And just briefly about, if I could take just a second to respond to that, the actual job description did not come into play in making the decision to terminate him. The defendants have agreed that he was terminated for political reasons. So that's not the issue. The issue is whether they even looked at it. And we have sufficient evidence in there to suggest that they never even looked at it, that they just made the decision to fire him and then retroactively, in hindsight, said we better find a reason that fits within the First Amendment here. I'll save the remainder of my time. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Groth.
Good morning. May it please the Court. The district court granted summary judgment to the city and the individual defendants in this case after faithfully applying this court's precedents, specifically Riley versus Blagojevich and its progeny, and its antecedents, Riley's antecedents, cases such as Selch versus Letts. Those decisions make clear that the official job description is a provisional safe harbor, and that the court's analysis begins and ends with that job description unless the plaintiff demonstrates that the job description for his position was unreliable because it was either manipulated or because it was the product of a flawed system. Now, in this case, there's no question about the job description. The job description was attached to the plaintiff's complaint. He acknowledged that it was prepared and periodically updated by an outside consulting firm, which worked for both Democratic and Republican administrations. He made no effort to contravene the information set forth in the Irwin affidavit, who was with the company that generated the job descriptions and periodically updated them. And there's no question that the job description, which was reviewed during the transition period by the incoming administration, was obtained from the prior HR director of the city. Now, there's been an argument, the plaintiff has made an argument, that somehow this job description was not official because it somehow conflicted with the ordinances, and I would simply point out that I believe that the incoming administration is entitled to rely on both the job descriptions and the ordinances. And we believe that both the job description and the ordinances conferred policymaking authority in this particular position, as did other factors.
What other ordinances could this fellow, we'll call him a dog catcher for purposes of this?
I prefer you not.
negotiate contracts, fire people, or exercise any control over the budget. Those are all things that the commission is supposed to do.
Well, no, I don't think so. I think that the job description, if you look at the job description, Your Honor, that specifically gave the incumbent in this position the authority to negotiate contracts with other cities in the county. And, in fact, the evidence shows that he did negotiate other contracts with other cities. He also had the same supervisory authority that any other department head in the city had. Which is all spelled out in the city's policy and procedures manual. He oversaw the work of the employees who reported to him at the animal shelter. There's just a lot of indicia in the job description to indicate that that he had wide-ranging discretionary authority and was responsible for dealing with members of the public, interfacing with elected officials, all the factors that this court has relied on in determining that individuals are policymakers.
Well, is it your position that the job description prevails even if it conflicts with the ordinance?
I think that there's a case, one of your cases, Walsh versus Heilman, I believe, which we cite in our brief, said, you know, and I think the Riley case makes this point too, that sometimes job descriptions aren't completely accurate descriptions of what an individual actually does. And in that instance,
that's certainly true, but that's not the question I asked.
In that instance, Your Honor, I believe the court in Walsh said that city officials, incoming administration, can rely on the job, on the ordinances. And I believe that the evidence in the record indicates that the ordinances were also looked at. And one of the important factors of in the ordinance is that it makes this position appointed by the mayor. And therefore, the mayor is going to be directly responsible if that particular individual interacts with the public or with elected officials in a manner that brings either benefit or humiliation on the person who appointed him. I think the fact that this is an appointed position, as Judge Sykes indicated, shows that it is inherently political, and in the city of Anderson, it always has been an inherently political position. Mr. Davis himself was the product of a political hire.
Well, not just political, but policymaking. This official of municipal government has a regulatory function and participates in a primary way in the regulatory process of promulgating new regulations about the issuance of licenses and permits and conditions and standards for revocation of licenses and permits, and then exercises discretion in individual cases about whether to actually issue or revoke. As I understand it, there's a substantial amount of discretion, although guided by the regulations that are promulgated. It's almost like a licensing and prosecutorial function sort of merged into one, seems to me. Is that an unfair character?
I think you're correct, Judge Sykes. And I think another thing that has to be borne in mind, I think this court has certainly taken it into account in some of these other decisions that it's handed down, you have to put yourself in the shoes of the incoming administration. What do they have to rely upon in deciding whether particular positions are protected or unprotected? They have to look at, they have to rely, and they're entitled to rely on the job descriptions. They're entitled to rely on the ordinances. They're entitled to, and they're not required to conduct a protracted inquiry, nor are they bound by the procedures by which the prior administration may have operated.
And the authority referred to in the job descriptions correlates to the authority conferred by the ordinance, as I understand it.
I believe it does,
and that's why I focused on the ordinances, because whatever factual dispute there might be about the motives for promulgating, and that's the wrong word, for rewriting the job description, that falls away if it's fully consistent with the organic authority that is bestowed on this position by the municipality's ordinances. And it seems to me there is a correlation there that is inescapable.
If you look at the ordinances, just separate them out, look at them as somebody would be looking at them for the very first time, I think you are left with the inescapable conclusion that this is a policy-making position. Whether that authority has been exercised or was exercised by the prior administration, that's the point that this court's cases make, is that the new administration isn't required to go out and conduct depositions or protracted inquiries to decide who they're going to keep and who they can keep and who they can replace. I mean, there's a very short period of time in the interregnum between administrations, and particularly when you're going from one political party to another political party, you are obviously besieged with a lot of responsibilities and duties to get your new administration up and running. And this court says that's why we're going to consider these job descriptions to be provisional safe harbors. And I think if you look at the job description, apart from the ordinances, I don't know how you could reach any conclusion other than that this position is a policy-making position.
Do you think there's a big difference between a Democratic dog catcher and a Republican dog catcher?
I'd like to think not, but whatever the but certainly the subject of animals and domesticated animals is a very has people have very passionate feelings, and if the you call them dog catcher, we call them senior humane officer, doesn't perform that job in accordance with the mayor's directives and policies, it will bring political disrepute upon that administration. And that's the whole idea behind elections, is if you don't if you elect someone new, you want that person to bring in new policies, and if you don't like the policies that that person brings to bear, then you can vote that person out of office.
The citizens of the city of Anderson, is it?
Anderson.
Take their pet control very seriously, do they?
Well, there's actually a very, as there are in many cities, there's a very active group of animal control activists who keep a very close watch on things such as the operation of the animal control department and issues such as euthanasia or no-kill policies become very, very volatile and highly controversial.
How many employees in the animal control unit?
I believe that the Judge Kennedy, the record indicates that there were 5 to 6 employees at any one time of this particular department, and there are other departments in the city of Anderson with department heads who were replaced, which had even fewer employees, such as city legal comes to mind. It's one of the smaller departments, but it's nevertheless a critical department and a highly visible department, because these individuals, the humane officer, is constantly interacting with the public. He's fielding calls. He's dealing with the animal rights activists. He's dealing with politicians who are checking in on him. I mean, I know in the city of Indianapolis, on two or three occasions, I can remember front page stories about controversies over the animal control director in that city, and there's often a very lively public debate about what to do with stray animals.
Right in the news today.
It was in the news today. I got my USA Today, and it's on the front page about the situation over in Ohio with
a rather extreme case.
It was. Let's hope it stays isolated. But again, if you look at the job description and you put yourself in the shoes of the incoming mayor and his advisors, when the job description says part of the responsibilities of this position are making policy and program recommendations, formulating and implementing long-range plans and goals for animal control, preparing and submitting annual budget recommendations for his department, and so forth. And negotiating contracts is actually one of the itemized duties, Judge Cuddy, negotiating contracts for animal control services with city and county governments. That would certainly suggest to me, if I were advising the incoming...
Does the ordinance authorize that?
Well, I don't think the ordinance is nearly as detailed.
You think they're irrelevant, huh?
No, I don't think the ordinances are irrelevant at all. No, I think you have to look at both the ordinances and the job description when you're deciding who you can replace.
If they conflict, who wins? That's the issue.
Well, I think I think that the ordinances are part of the law and probably at a higher priority on the scale of those things. But I think the incoming administration has to look at both the job description and the ordinances. And I suppose the ordinances would prevail, to be directly responsive. But either way, I think the new administration can consider either. So I'll just unless there are other questions, I'll just wrap up, and we would respectfully request that the court affirm the lower court's decision.
Thank you, Mr. Roth. So how much time? 4 minutes, Mr.
Thank you, Judge. I think that under the standard of summary judgment and the review de novo, that the plaintiff in this case, Larry Davis, is entitled to the benefit of the doubt that the administration never even looked at the ordinance, never even looked at any job description when they made the decision to fire him. We raised that in a number of ways. We had Mr. Ikes, who was on the city council, and a part of that inner circle, talk about how He was unaware of any other reason for terminating Larry Davis except that the mayor was absolutely angry at him once he was elected. And Larry Davis took the position that he wasn't supporting that mayoral candidate because he firmly believed that the mayor didn't satisfy the residency requirements prior to the primary. That's the reason he didn't support him. So there is evidence in there, and I think the plaintiff is entitled to the benefit of the doubt, that the city administration, before they took office in the transition period, did not even look at the ordinance. So you have Mr. Lannon's deposition where he asserts the attorney-client privilege for an answer to questions, and then you have the affidavit later. You also have the mayor, if he looked at the ordinance, would have not hired these two bozos. One was a bus driver and the other is a professional bookie. Those are the people that lasted less than a couple months on the job. Currently, the mayor has gotten smart and is now privatized. There is no political position there. It is now a privatized operation. So, in other words...
I think for our purposes, though, we'll accept that this was a political firing. And the more focused question is whether the position is policymaking. And if it is, then the fact that it's a political firing is not actionable under the First Amendment.
Well, I think what I read in the Moss versus Martin case is that if you look at the total picture, it is the plaintiff's burden of proof to demonstrate that there is a reason why the incoming administration should be granted qualified immunity because they didn't know what the law was. Just because a person is a supervisor, as Rutan says, doesn't mean they can be fired.
Right. I'm setting qualified immunity aside and just dealing with the merits here.
Okay.
We'll give you the merits assumption that you're entitled to, which is that this was a political firing.
Okay.
And whether that implicates the First Amendment or not depends upon whether this is a policymaking position. If it's a policymaking position, then the answer is no. And whether it's a policymaking position depends on what the ordinances and the job descriptions say about this job.
Right. And the question, of course, is the ordinance controlling or is the job description? We maintain that the job description is not, it's merely advisory. But the ordinance, if the court wants to place more weight on the ordinance, the last ordinance that would apply allows the mayor the right to appoint the animal control the senior humane advisor with the consent of the Animal Control Commission. So it doesn't mean that it's a political appointment. It just means that he has the power to do that. He could have appointed any number of people in different positions that are not for political reasons.
Right. I'm talking about the authority that's vested in this official of municipal government by the ordinances and as further explicated in the job description. The ordinances are the starting place, and then the job description provides more detail.
I understand that, but if the court is saying that there is no way to overcome that, then we have nothing more to say. But on the other hand, if there is a way to overcome that, and we have addressed that based upon the Moss-Martin case, and that is, if they didn't even look at this, and they had a discussion in there, if they didn't even look at the ordinance, if they didn't even look at the job description, and they just fired him, they can't retroactively come back and say, hey, we're getting rid of you. They can always fire him for cause. And I heard defense counsel say that that was one of the reasons why this was such a politically sensitive job. If he wasn't supporting the mayor, that's insubordination, and that's for cause. I see my time has run out. If there are no more questions, we would simply ask that the court remand and allow this to go forward on trial. Thank you very much.
Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.